Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
This is Movers and Shakers, where we interview the upcoming generation of Make It Happen multifamily investors to share their story.
Welcome to the Movers and Shakers podcast. My name is Gino Barbaro, co-founder of Jake and Gino, multifamily investor, educator, father, mentor, and I'm joined by my co-host, Joshua Ryan Rusin, the community director of Jake and Gino. Josh, how are you doing today?
Gino, doing well, my friend. Excited you took a cue and wore the same color shirt as me. Excited about reflecting on everything we've accomplished this year, and excited Monday. I'm taking a flight down to spend a week with you and the family, man. What's going on in your world?
To all the listeners out there, when Josh comes down to the Barbaro household, that's another mouth to feed. It's Christmas time, so I've got a few Christmas gifts for Josh. When he wakes up Christmas morning, he's going to have some Christmas gifts underneath the Christmas tree. And I'm looking forward to having him down here. The only thing is I forgot the memo. I didn't get the memo about slicking my hair back. So next time, tell me you're going to slick your hair back and look good, and I'll do it, Josh.
Boom, making it happen. Listen, what I want to dive into is today's guest. So today we have Dan Kruger and Anthony Pacino. A little bit about these guys. So second time Movers and Shakers guests. Now, Dan has acquired over 100 units and successfully executed multiple refinancing roles since leaving the corporate finance world less than 2 years ago. Anthony is a best-selling author, investor, and small business operator who builds successful companies by designing efficient systems that scale and maintaining focus on the end user experience. Together, Anthony and Dan founded Invictus Capital, a vertically integrated acquisition firm based out of the Twin Cities. In 2020, they raised nearly $3 million in capital and executed multiple syndications and acquired 62 units in St. Paul, Minnesota. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, guys.
I should note that Anthony was involved in over half of those deals. So he said, I acquired over 100, but 62 of them Anthony and I were partnering on. So,
all right.
Just to clarify.
Yeah, Dan did all the heavy lifting. But you guys did not share the memo about the uniform, but it seems like Dan and I got on the same page. We're both wearing our gray.
A little pink going on too.
Yeah, a little pink, yeah. Dan just had a baby girl, so he's celebrating that by wearing pink every day this week.
Congratulations, Dan. Good job, bro.
All right, so maybe gentlemen, let's give them the backstory, man. I want to learn how you guys met, how you decided to lean forces, why you decided to lean forces. Let's kind of paint the picture, and then we'll dive into some of the deals you've done.
Sure. So we met, it was September, just over a year ago, September 2019. We met at a local real estate event. It was something called the North Star. It was a two-day event up here in the Twin Cities. And it's just a great case study of why to go and get in the room at these things, even if it's not your favorite thing to do or you're not comfortable. You never know who you're going to meet. So we met at an event, just started kind of keeping in touch and chatting. And then over about a month or two, we realized that there was a really good fit there just with skill sets and personality and our goals. And so we decided just to start doing everything together. And just like you'd expect, it's like 1 + 1 = 3. Things just really took off when we combined forces and started working together.
So Anthony, let me ask you a question. Why for you, why for you real estate though? Because you were not in the real estate space. Dan was already investing in real estate.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Real estate's kind of always been in the background for me in a couple different ways. In college, we did fix and flips. And then a little bit later, I passively invested in some quads. But it wasn't until like 2018, I was living back here in Minneapolis that I really got bit by the multifamily bug in particular. And what's like really appealing to me about this industry is just how simple the model is. Once you understand how the pieces fit together, and it's really easy to understand how they go together, the sky's the limit. You can build anything. It's just like Legos. They only go together maybe 3 or 4 different ways, but you can build anything with them. You could build the Star Wars Death Star. You could build a little submarine, like anything's possible. And that's really the case with real estate and multifamily in particular. Once you understand the systems, how these things operate, you can go in there and just keep using the same plan over and over and over and just keep doing it larger and larger if you want to, if that's your goal. So that's the thing that really attracted me, is the simplicity and how easy it is to execute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can second that. I mean, actually, Anthony got into this before I did. I can't remember what year Anthony started. I just started more aggressively. He started kind of just on the side. He was doing his thing. And then, like you mentioned, he kind of picked up some quads, but it wasn't really a full-time endeavor. I pretty much dove in head first, but started a couple years after him. But it was the exact same thing. As soon as I started going down that rabbit hole, just the simplicity, the fact that you could understand every element of it, which isn't really the case with other types of financial products out there, like any kind of trading or investing. A lot of stuff seems a lot like gambling compared to real estate. Real estate, just you give so much control and you can understand it, and it's incredibly scalable.
So Dan, what were you doing before real estate?
I was in finance. I was in corporate finance. So I was still, you know, building models, managing operating expenses. So I was doing all the same types of things, but just focusing on projects that I had little to no interest in, just because it was in the corporate world that just, you know, didn't really motivate me. And then real estate was just, like I said, just, you know, as soon as I went down that rabbit hole, I was hooked and I was like, okay, this is what I need to be doing.
So Dan, let me just dive into your first deal real quick. Can you just give us an overview of that first deal? I mean, you're in corporate finance, you're doing a W-2, and now we're going to be talking about, you have 100 units today, but how did that first deal look for you?
Yeah, the first deal was just a 6-unit. And with like a lot of newer investors getting into that one, I thought I was going to be able to make it a passive endeavor for myself right off the bat and just hire a third-party management company. Found out that didn't really work. Both because of the type of deal, it was a heavy value add, it was only 6 units, and I'm too much of a control freak to feel comfortable with that kind of paradigm. So I just pivoted right away. Within about 6 or 8 months of trying it that way, I figured that this was not a good fit. I just need to dive in and manage it myself. And then on the second property I got, that one came with a live-in caretaker, leveraged him to manage both because they're, you know, really close together. And then by, I think it was around the third property, I made my first hire so that I could try to be vertically integrated, focus on the higher level aspects of the business, but still be very much in control of all the operations on the ground.
And when you bought that, what deal did you say goodbye to your W-2 job and focus on real estate full time?
It was as soon as I got that first deal under contract, because I already had a side hustle that I had been doing for about 4 years parallel to my corporate job. So I had something that was producing the equivalent of my salary, but that wasn't really scalable. That was a nutrition coaching business where I'm basically selling my time for money, and I really enjoyed it, but there's definitely a glass ceiling. It's only 24 hours in a day and I can only work with so many people. So it just didn't seem scalable. And I also didn't really see myself, you know, building wealth or doing it when I was 60. So I knew that I had to kind of find some other thing to add in the mix. Real estate popped up. And then, as soon as that was under contract, I was out.
That's awesome. So, and Anthony, when you started, you joined the Jake and Gino community around September of last year. What were you looking for in the community, and how did the mentorship help you out with this real estate journey?
For me, the primary thing, well, there was a couple actually. So joining the community, you have access to the education, you have access to the network. And then, you know, you just, there's something to be said about actually joining a community, putting your money where your mouth is, and actually committing to a thing and kind of like burning the boats and saying, I'm committed to this thing. There's so much free education out there. Like there's, you could learn everything that you want about apartments, about multifamily investing. Just go to YouTube, Google it. You could do it. You could find it. But when the material is free, you don't really value it in the same way as when you're paying for it. When you're part of this community where you look around, you know, everybody else is also paid to be there. It elevates the quality of the relationships that you can have. A lot of the networking events that I would go to here locally in the Twin Cities, you know, they were free events. And so you would have a lot, I would say 80% of the people coming that maybe had never actually invested in real estate, didn't really know what they wanted to do. They weren't focused. And so they were just kind of tire kickers. And so the quality of conversations and relationships you could form from that were fairly low. They weren't super great. Whereas coming to the Jake and Gino community, the really powerful thing is that everybody is like-minded and focused and moving towards the same goal. And you know that they've paid to be there, that it's not just this person's walked in the door and they'll take anybody. So that just elevates the quality of relationships that you get. And then the education side just accelerates that because it's compacted into a way that's easily consumable. And the support that you get from guys like Josh and Marco and Gino, the community at large and the coaches that, you know, really help foster and bring you up so that they make sure that you're succeeding. And that's something that I, you know, when you go and look at these educational programs, there's a lot to choose from, but you need to be really careful about which ones you get into bed with, because you want to make sure it's good for you and your personality and your long-term goals. For me, the Jake and Gino group was great because it's more of a family, and there's a really deep vested interest between all the people in the group and seeing you succeed. So that was something that really resonated with me.
So Anthony, yeah,
you guys do a good job of vetting people as well. That's when I first talked to Josh. I noticed that you guys don't just let anybody join, even if they come show up with money. They have to actually be a good fit. They've got to be someone who's, you know, going to take action, who's not just going to sit there and detract from the group. So that was something that turned me on, because a lot of those groups out there, like Anthony mentioned, they're just trying to get as many people in the door as possible, just try to get money. And, you know, the quality of the members isn't necessarily a priority for them. They just want to get as many members as possible. And then you guys, you know, I could tell just on the first call that you've got to actually be someone who's going to take some action if you're going to be in the group, which is great.
Can I get a couple of aha moments for you guys from the last 12 to 18 months, either through the education or through your investing? Because we're going to be discussing a case study, and you had mentioned the deal to me, and I'm going to give you a couple of my aha moments over the last 18 to 24 months. Anthony, you want to start first? Just a couple aha moments about, wow, you're building systems, real estate, multifamily, is this way? Like you'd mentioned, scalable. Can you give me a couple?
Yeah, I think the really big aha moment that I had in 2020 was around taxes and depreciation in particular, learning more about cost segregation studies and bonus depreciation, and really understanding how that not only can benefit me being, you know, Dan and I, we're syndicators, so we work with our passive investors, really understanding how does that flow through and benefit our passive investors. That was the big aha moment for me, where I started to realize, okay, this is the true power of investing in an apartment syndication, not just the returns, which are fantastic. Yeah, you get cash flow and you get the appreciation, that's cool, but the tax benefits and the fact that that can pass through to passive investors, that was the big aha moment this year for me.
All right, Dan.
The one for me is probably going to be, you know, we came into this year around December and January of 2020, we came in with this goal to try to get a deal closed per quarter, you know, like four deals a year. And we had all these grand plans. We're going to go out and find sellers that we could try to buy from. We're going to go find investors. We're going to do all these deals. And then COVID happened, and we were really forced to pivot. And a lot of people might kind of sit back and say, oh, there's no deals, everyone's in lockdown, there's nothing I can do. But we just doubled down on what we could do. And that's beefing up the podcast, or I should say creating the podcast. We didn't even have a podcast before COVID, doing that. Anthony wrote a book. And so we've made all this traction and progress. We still managed to get two deals closed this year, which is great. But we did all this other stuff that helped move the business forward that we weren't necessarily hyper-focused on coming into the year, but we had to shift and focus on when, you know, our options were limited, when everyone's stuck inside. That was a big one for me, is we don't always have to be locking up more deals. There's a lot of different things we can do to move the ball forward. You just have to be able to pivot and focus on what you have available, what your resources are, and how you can make the most of them.
Yeah. And I want to throw out a second aha, which really ties into the case study that we're going to get into on this particular deal. It's that not getting too tied into one business plan or one playbook. Yes. Understanding that when the field shifts, when the game shifts, you need to take that playbook and say, this works, but we're going to put it aside for now because the economic conditions have changed, the lending environment's different, and what we know about the market and what's going to do in the next year, it's a little bit murky. And so we need to pivot and adapt our game plan. And so that was the big aha moment for us, is that, hey, we can succeed in this environment as well, but just maybe not with the same exact game plan as before.
Yeah, Dan, you said something really powerful there that I want to dive into. So you mentioned when COVID hit, you know, a lot of people went to lockdown mode, right? Do nothing, and they kind of adapted it and made those excuses their own, where you guys chose to build and make it happen. And I really believe that's part of your success, right? You're able to take the adversity and use that to get around it rather than use that as an excuse. So, you know, big shout out and kudos to you guys for doing that.
Yeah, we both love solving problems. So whenever we approach obstacles or issues, we almost get kind of excited because it's a new puzzle to solve, and it's really satisfying to solve it. So we really focus on finding solutions. And there's a lot of people out there that really just focus on problems and they don't try to look for solutions. They just focus on negatives and see, oh, there's all these obstacles, I can't do anything.
Yeah, it's Winston Churchill's quote of something like, pessimists see difficulty in every opportunity, and optimists see opportunity in every difficulty. So yep. 2020 hits, COVID strikes. Yeah, the world kind of changes. That's a lot of difficulty, But within that difficulties, there's a lot of opportunity as well. You just got to go looking for it.
I love that. So Josh, you mind if I share my aha moment with you? He's giving me the thumbs up. The reason why I love this, it just came to me. You guys are going to be sharing the case study with us. Over the last 18 to 24 months, Jake and I were always buy and holders, right? We're going to buy this deal and hold it forever. But, you know, listening to Bill Hammond, coming to our on-site boot camps, doing our buy right boot camp, we started talking about the three pillars of real estate, and we're actually trademarking the phrase. And for me, it's powerful because you need to look through a deal by using our framework of buy right, manage right, and finance right, but also the three pillars of real estate: your market cycle, your debt component, and your exit strategy. And you guys are buying a great deal in this type of the market cycle where you don't want to buy an asset that's got a ton of CapEx. You don't want to buy an asset that's really old, right? And right now, you know, that's where people are buying assets in these big markets like Atlanta, and they're buying 60s and 70s assets. The problem is they're overpaying. There's nothing wrong with buying an old asset. You just got to be careful where you are in the market cycle, right? So we're pivoting towards newer assets right now. Returns may be a little bit lower in the beginning, but we don't have that substantial, what we call the CapEx tsunami coming up. We don't have cast iron plumbing. We don't have a lot of those issues.
It's all risk.
Yeah, the residents are able to pay because maybe they're a little bit higher of a resident class or resident type. So for me, the aha moment was, okay, let's look where we are in the market cycle right now. And obviously, let's not overpay, right? You really have to underwrite, I mean, 200 deals to get one really good one, right? And I think it's really, that's a difficult part, right? Like you said, Dan, like you want to do, but you know, no deal is better than a bad deal. I mean, that's been my aha moment for forever, but it really came into play in this year because we've missed out on a lot of deals. And, you know, Jake always said, there's risk when you close a deal. If you lose the deal, there's no risk because you're not operating the deal. So that, you know, I have a bunch of aha moments, but I wanted to lead that into the case study because for us, the last two deals we've bought have been newer deals. They're smaller, but they're newer deals. Now there's less CapEx going forward. The resident base is much better, and we're really comfortable with those deals. So Dan, let's dive into this case study, the deal that you guys just closed.
Sure. Yeah. So we closed this about a month ago now. So it's 30 units and it's located in a really nice neighborhood in St. Paul, Minnesota. It's known as kind of like the Grand Avenue area. And it's the old money neighborhood of St. Paul, where all of the turn of the century mansions were built and are still there. And so it's just this nice kind of quiet upper end area. Median track income over there is 175 grand. So you've got a really good spot there. And as far as rents go, rents were pretty low relative to the price points in the other hot areas where people were. So it really presented a good opportunity because it's a great place for people who are trying to cut back on expenses to move into, where they're getting in a lower price point, but they're still in a A-class neighborhood and they're still near all the restaurants and all the hot stuff, but they're not paying that class A brand new build price point. So yeah, 30 units. They're older brownstones, but to your CapEx tsunami comments, they've been kept up immaculately by the operator that owned them. The operator, and that's, you know, part of the deal, we'll get into the details on this, but he's a large operator here. He's got about 1500 units locally. And he just is known for keeping a very clean operation. CapEx items are done. Everything is just a well-oiled machine. So we knew that we were getting really good quality assets. So yeah, 30 units, purchase price was 3.75. Our capital raise for it was 1.475. Yeah. What else as far as high level numbers, Anthony?
So some interesting things that we can talk about on that deal. So we came into this one purchasing it at about 125K per door in that area. Similar assets of that type were transacting more around 150 per door. So we came in right off the bat buying about 25,000 below market average. And then the market rent was also about 20% higher than what the current in-place rents were. And the really interesting part about that is due to the seller and his mindset about why he was selling these properties, why he wasn't driving the rents aggressively. And that actually created a lot of opportunity for us. So once we get to that point, we can kind of dive into that seller's backstory, because that was really what made this deal such a gem for us.
How did you guys find the deal?
I was going to say, this whole deal is just one big ball of intertwined relationships that all kind of worked out in our favor. So This deal was actually brought to me by a broker who was a client of mine in that side hustle from the nutrition coaching a few years earlier. At the time I was working with him, he was just getting started as a broker and wasn't doing a ton of transactions. But I started seeing more and more closed deals, emails coming from him. And so I just shot him an email and said, hey, you know, it's been a while since we chatted. We should catch up and talk about what kind of stuff is coming across your desk, because it looks like exactly what we're looking for. And we looked at a few properties with him, and, you know, nothing really got too exciting. And then during one walkthrough, he mentioned that he was about to go do a photo shoot at this other portfolio that was about to come on the market. And he kind of gave us an early heads up. And because he and I were close, we had a good relationship, we got in there early, we took a look at it, and he really pushed our offer to the seller pretty hard because he liked us. And then from there, we developed a good seller relationship, and that developed a good lender relationship. And it just, yeah, all this stuff lined up really perfectly. But that's how we found that one, just relationships and leveraging your network and keeping in touch with people and just being proactive about, you know, catching up and saying, hey, what's going on? What are you looking at these days? Just that stuff really pays off.
Give me the timeline of the deal. I mean, when you found, from finding the deal to putting the deal on the contract to raising the capital.
It's quicker than we wanted, but I want to say, what was it, around September we looked at it, Anthony, and then closed.
So early September, and then we were closing early November. I think we saw it maybe first week of September, put it under contract the second week of September. Money went hard, I think, first week of October. And then
we were trying to close 30 some days to do our DD and capital raising. So it was a tight one, but
it was tight. The closing was originally slated for end of October, but it got pushed back by a week or two. Actually, it got pushed back three or four different occasions, and it wasn't due to anything inside of our control. It was mostly like bank situations. But one of the things that was really important for the seller wasn't about getting top dollar. It was about having a seamless, headache-free transaction. He didn't want to be operating with people who were going to come back in the 11th hour and try and retrade and drive a hard bargain. He wanted people who he knew, hey, they're going to go to the closing table. They're going to get this done. And for us, one of our selling points to him was, hey, we've never put a deal under contract that we didn't close. And so that was like music to his ears. He's like, yes, let's do that. But then what ended up happening is, you know, closing kept getting pushed, and you know, you could very easily spoil that relationship with the seller. For us, we want to keep that relationship really solid because he's clearing out of his St. Paul portfolio. And over the next couple of years, he's going to be offloading those. We want to be the people that he calls first. So we want to stay and like really keep that relationship solid. So we were being really proactive with the communication. Every time something would pop up and go wrong, like, hey, the bank is pushing back closing, we'd be on the phone with him and saying, and like walking through that situation. So he understood that like we were still very invested in there. So like being very communicative was key there.
So guys, at Jake and Gina, we have an acronym, the SPY technique. Everyone write this down. It's S-P-Y. It's another trademark we're coming out with. It's really a negotiation tactic. You guys have played it brilliantly. S stands for the seller. What's the seller looking for? As buyers, we always think the seller wants the highest price, so they want the best terms. From what I heard from Anthony, they just want this off their table. They've got 1,500 units. This is a little pimple on their ass right now, and he just wants to get it done, right? So if you can, you know that, that's one way to maybe get a better price or throw in a little bit more of a term. So everyone out there, don't think of yourself. Think of what you can do for the seller, how you can provide value to the seller. The P stands, the property. Now, this property sounds amazing. It's an amazing property, right? The CapEx has been held up. It's in a great area. You said, what was it? 175 median income. I mean, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Very stable neighborhood. I'm assuming that there are probably a lot of white collarish kind of jobs, people telecommuting. So you don't have to have that risk of people losing their jobs or not having the ability to pay. Also, it's probably well below replacement value. Even though stuff is trading at 150, probably to replace that in that neighborhood is probably a lot more than 150. Oh, yeah. So the property is great. And then the why, you. We are always the last ones. As the buyers, we have to think of ourselves last. Does this fit our model? Can we make money from this? Is it going to be great for our investors? So for always start out with that seller and how you can, you know, solve the problem on the other side. And the only way you do that is by having that relationship, building rapport with the broker and with the seller, and really finding out what their needs are. And you know, I'll give you a classic example. We're going through a deal. We're talking to this seller. He's not the decision maker. His brother is. So we've been wasting a month talking to the wrong dude. So, I mean, like, and that's on us, right? Maybe from the very beginning, we should have said, hey, do you have any partners? Oh, yeah, my brother. Oh, why don't we get him on the conversation? Because now the thing is, oh, my brother's sick. he's got COVID. Oh, well, dude, really? I mean, wish we had known that, you know, but you really, really have to have an open slate and really, I mean, it's a little bit of coaching going in there, but really, you know, don't have any preconceived notions and just ask questions and try to pull out as much as you can to be able to craft out an offer to be able to, you know, to get this deal done.
Yeah, and usually the broker will give you insight to that, because one of my standard questions when I'm doing a walkthrough with a broker and I haven't actually met the seller is, does this seller care more about time or price? Because it's usually one of those two. In this case, the seller did have a 1031 component. And like Anthony mentioned, he was more concerned with finding a group he could transact with repeatedly as opposed to trying to get top dollar on this one and then go to the market on the next deal and try to find someone good. He wanted to, find a relationship and he wanted it done on a certain timeline. So we're like, yes, we'll do those things. We don't know how, but we'll do it. Like, we know how to do the relationship, but usually we want like 60 days and we're like, okay, we can make it work in 30. We'll just
repeat those questions again, Dan. I want everyone to write these questions down because they're really important.
I just usually ask brokers, is the seller more concerned with time or price? Because it's usually one of those two. Maybe it's, you know, 50-50, but it's usually just a combination of those two items. There might be other little nuances, but it's usually one or the other. And if you know which one it is, then you can leverage that to get some wiggle room on the other one. If they want their price, maybe you can get more time. If they want it done quick, you usually can get the price down or get creative with some seller carrybacks or something like that.
I love that. Anthony, anything to add to that?
No, I think you nailed it.
Yes.
So cool.
That's a good partnership right there. Fund it. Let's dive into the funding then. What kind of bank debt did you guys get on it? Talk about the raise. And you guys raised $1.5 million on this deal. And this is your second raise.
Yeah, that's another relationship story there. So once we got into this deal with the seller, he started asking us about who we use. We told him, he's like, oh, I've got a great relationship with this credit union over here, a smaller local regional bank that is kind of a sleepy commercial real estate lender. I've seen them when I've looked up properties on CoStar as the debt holder, but they're not the first name that comes to mind. So he's like, oh, I got a great relationship with these guys. I've been working with them for 20 some years. Let me connect you with so-and-so over there. So we ended up getting some terms that were pretty close to agency terms from a community bank, which is great. So it was 30-year amortization, 3.35 interest, interest only for a year. You know, if it were more of a value add property, we probably could have gotten some more, but because it was so stabilized, it was kind of a tough sell to get more than that. But it's still great to get it for the first year, because that gives us a little bit of cushion for 2021 here. If things are still shaky, that'll keep the debt service a little bit lower. So yeah, 10-year term, 5-year fixed. So there's no balloon for 10 years. The rate resets to, I think, LIBOR plus 1% at the 5-year mark. So there's, you know, we got 10 years before we've got a forced event of some kind, so we can sit tight for a long time. Interest only. What else was there, Anthony? That was pretty much all the debt components. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, that's. I think those are the meaningful ones. But I do want to point out, like at the beginning of this deal, it was all about creating as much optionality as possible. As if we had as many options in our back pocket, then moving forward, regardless of what 2021 brings or 2022, like COVID doesn't really matter as long as we have a bunch of options in our back pocket. And so we really wanted to pair the right debt with this deal. And that debt was something that was going to be long and stable and that wasn't going to force us into any premature transactions that we didn't want to do, whether that was having to do a refinance or, you know, just get out of the loan in general. We wanted to make sure that at no point in the near future were we going to be forced into some kind of transaction. We didn't want to find ourselves to be motivated sellers because of the debt.
I love the Jake and Gina students because they're employing the three pillars beautifully, right? They've bought this asset at the right part of the market cycle. They're thinking about their exit strategy long-term, and they're coupling the debt with that. And that optionality is really important because something may happen in a couple of years and you may need to pivot. So that, that is just sounds like an amazing deal. Now, Anthony, how did you feel though when you had to raise $1.475 million? Because first time I had to do a raise, I got a little nauseous, got a little scared. I'm like, who's going to want to invest with me? What if I lose investors' money? What was going through your mind when you had that big number in front of you?
You know, our first deal that we did together, Dan and I, back in January was a $1 million raise. So this one was just a little bit of a stretch beyond that.
So
it felt like, okay, we can do this. That's a little bit of a stretch. It's going to push us outside our comfort zone, but we can do that. It wasn't like we were suddenly 10Xing and, you know, going from a $1 million raise to a 10 million. That would have been probably a little bit too much. It'd been too much pressure. So there was, whenever you go into a capital raise, when you're new, for us, at least I can speak for ourselves, is that there is that anxiety of like, okay, are we actually going to be able to pull this thing off? But it's just like anything in life, any big, hairy, audacious goal that you have, you just start where you're at and take the next step. You know what needs to be done. You need to have the conversations. You need to put it in front of people and just, you know, start doing those little actions that'll eventually get you there. And for us, like most of the work, I think, in a capital raise actually occurs months and years before that capital raise. So it's putting in the time and the reps and the relationships with everybody around you, putting out the content so people are aware of what you're doing. You get the investors that are, you know, already lined up and interested in working with you. So by the time the deal comes, it's just a matter of saying, hey, you know, we've been talking about this. The time has finally come. We have a really cool opportunity for you. Would you like to join us? And so for us, we felt relatively certain that we were going to get there comfortably.
Yeah, it was just a time thing, really. I mean, the dollar amount wasn't intimidating. It was just the fact that we had to do it in about 30 days instead of 60. So we were just outside our comfort zone. But yeah, it was, and we have a, luckily this came at a good time because we've got a nice track record built up. We've got a lot of investors who are starting to get refi checks. We've had a deal go full cycle. So there's proof of concept, there's happy investors, and there's been some capital events where they've had capital returned to them and they need to put it back into something. So that's just going to keep getting better and better as we keep knocking out deals. Those older deals are going to start having capital events and those are going to start filling up the next deals as long as people keep reinvesting, which we always encourage them to do, but you know, sometimes people want
to
go back.
Let's go back to that first capital raise though, because the second one, let's give some tips to anyone listening on the show. What would you have done differently on that first capital raise, or what mistakes did you make, or what learning lessons did you have in that first capital raise, both of you guys?
I've got a lot. I'd say the first one, do a webinar, because we didn't do one on the first one. I did everything one-to-one, which is great. You get to build a good relationship with people, but it's not really scalable. Yes. So do a webinar for the official presentation. That also gives you something to refer people back to if they missed it. It gives you something so you don't have to have the exact same conversation over and over again. And then also something that we didn't necessarily notice on the first one, but we definitely notice on the second one, is providing more insight into the different possible scenarios that could happen. We've historically just presented, okay, here's our pro forma. Here's what we think is going to happen. And we've always presented the more pessimistic one. But then after looking at what some other groups have been doing and some of the questions we've been getting, we thought going forward, it would be a lot better if we presented best case, most likely case, and worst case scenarios so that people could see those three different scenarios and kind of do the math themselves. Because we would always kind of present the pessimistic one and then tell people, oh, okay, this is worst case scenario. We could also potentially see this. But if it's not on there in writing in ink, it doesn't really, I don't think it really sticks quite as much. So we're going to be a little bit more transparent with all the different outcomes and provide more insight into how much upside there actually is in some of these.
Love that.
Yeah, we like to under-promise, over-deliver, but at a certain point, you also have to kind of, you know, paint a picture of what that nice world that we're trying to create looks like. So it can't all be doom and gloom. The big thing that I learned is fewer people are going to commit than you think. So when you're having these conversations and you're going to have them for months leading up to the first capital raise, you're going to have people who are saying, yeah, when you get a deal, put it in front of me. I'm psyched. Let's do this. And then the time will come. You'll put the deal in front of them and they're going to say no. And you're going to go, wait, what? I'm confused. Like for the last couple of months and weeks, we've been prepping you for this and you've been excited. You were like chomping at the bit. And now here's the opportunity. And you're going to get a lot of no's. You're going to, even from people who are well primed and ready to go, you can't take it personally. You can't try and justify it or, you know, trying to argue with them. Like, don't try and sell people who are saying no. Try and sell the maybes. You know, don't waste your time on that. They have their reasons. Try and understand those reasons and say, well, hey, is it just the deal doesn't make sense for you? Is it not a good time personally? Like, what is it so I can understand? So when we put the next deal in front of you, maybe we can structure it in a way that's more enticing for you. And you can take that information and learn from it. But you're going to get a lot of no's and it's going to hurt and it's going to suck.
A quick tip for everybody is, and this is kind of a sales thing, but no means not today. Doesn't mean no, especially with this, because if we're talking about a 50 or 100 grand investment for somebody, that's not small. I mean, that's a house, right? So that's right up there with the biggest thing they've ever done. Most people are used to investing in stocks and mutual funds where they can kind of ease in 100 or 1,000 bucks at a time. With this, it's a fairly big step. So if someone's never done it before, they're going to need a lot of time. A lot of the investors that have worked with me are first-time investors, and it probably takes the better part of a year to get them really comfortable with the business model. And even when they are, to Anthony's point, as soon as the deal is actually on the table, all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, now this is real.
It's real.
Do I want to do it? So you've got to really kind of hold people's hands, make them feel comfortable. Don't rush them. Every missed opportunity that they miss is just another case study that you can show them as far as past performance. So if they don't get into a deal because they're nervous, just keep them up to date with how it's performing and the numbers will speak for themselves. See, like if you were in, you would have made, you know, 8% this year, we're doing a refi next year, you'd get half your money back. Like this is actually happening. This isn't projections. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, real time returns. So those track records can be very powerful as you develop them.
I love that. Last question before we go to the short answers, both of you, what is the game plan? The business plan going forward for this deal?
Oh, for this deal?
Yeah.
So yeah, like we mentioned before, there's this nice 20% upside potential in the rents, which the way we've underwritten it, we have getting done over about 2 to 3 years. So the game plan right now is just to kind of slow roll through this winter. We got it fully occupied. Well, actually there was one vacant unit that went vacant on November, but we got that one leased up. So we're just going to keep it full for winter here. And then as we get into spring and some of the warmer months, as those units organically turn over, we're going to bump them right back up to market rent where they should be. So we're not going to force people out. We've got really great tenants. In fact, a lot of people are prepaying. About 3 hours after we closed on this deal, my property manager had 3 phone calls from tenants wanting to pay their rent in advance for multiple months. So when you get people like that in this type of economic environment, you do not want to kick them out.
That means so you're underrented. Excuse me to interrupt. That means you
exactly
have, you know,
yeah, exactly.
That's not a broker telling you that, hey, you know what? You can raise rents. No, that is actually proof of the pudding. When you're full during winter months and during the holiday season, which it's known when it's notoriously slow, they know they've got the deal. So, hey, that's great. I mean, if you guys are going to coast through and do that, that's a great strategy.
The plan is to do a refi probably around year 2 to 3 sometime. Well after our rent increase phase. Like we said, the basis for this really is it should be about 150 a door. We got it at 125. We could easily get it up to, you know, 160 to 175. By the time we refi. So this is going to be a nice little capital event there in the future. And then with the location and the quality of the assets, it's we really just want to hold it and start to own the entire neighborhood.
Love that. Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsors. Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary 3-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know this isn't a high-pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now.
All right, gentlemen, since you're second time guest, I switched up the personal development questions here. So what we'll go to make these answers. So Anthony, we'll start with you and then Dan will answer. So, all right. What would be your best advice for a new multifamily investor?
I've been saying this a lot recently because it's just been on top of my mind. It's been really relevant, something Dan and I talk a lot about, and it really came to fruition on this deal in so many different ways. It's play long-term games with long-term people. Understand that this real estate thing that we're doing, this is a really long game. The people that you're going to be transacting with next year are the same people that you're probably going to be transacting with in 20 years. And so building those relationships now, it really, really matters. Don't keep your eye on the short-term transaction of what's in it for you right now. Look long-term. So we look at Dan and his relationship with that broker back when it was just nutrition. It had nothing to do with real estate. You know, Dan was playing a long-term game with long-term people. He was keeping a quality relationship. And so when that guy was finally in a position where he is one of the top 4 brokers in the cities for multifamily properties, he thinks of us because he has that really good relationship. He knows Dan's a good guy. And so whether it's the broker or it's the seller who's now looking at us and saying, hey, these guys, they can do what they say. I want to work with them for a long time. It's all about playing long-term games with long-term people.
Dan, and you?
Oh, same question?
Yeah.
So advice for new investors. I think that one's huge. I don't think it can be overstated. So I'm just going to reemphasize, don't worry about what you can get out of something today. Just make it your priority to try to help other people as much as you can. And it's going to come back in some way. The other thing I would say is identify what things you need to be doing to move the needle forward. And do that religiously every single day for years on end. It's going to be very slow, but it works. And so for a lot of real estate, newer real estate investors, that's going to be networking, going to events, knowing as many people in the industry as you possibly can, so that when you need help and you need a lender or you need a vendor or you need to, if you need something, you've got a good network of people who you could reach out to and connect with. So figure out what you need to be doing, which is networking, looking for deals, looking for capital, and just make it a routine to do something every single day. Maybe it's contact 5 sellers every day. It doesn't need to be huge, but small, consistent efforts for very long periods of time reap huge rewards.
Man, those are some powerful nuggets. All right, next question for you guys. So what would you say the keys are to a successful partnership in this business or in business as a whole?
Who's first?
I'm going to go first so I can steal all the good answers. It's for us, it's been, and I've had bad relationships. I've had bad partnerships in the past that didn't work out. They usually fail because it was unclear expectations and accountabilities, not being on the same page about who's doing what when. But what's really, really critical and something that Dan and I have noticed this year from our working relationship and, you know, thinking about possibly partnering with other people and looking at those relationships and saying, well, why doesn't this feel right? And the reason it doesn't feel right sometimes is because the long-term vision of where you want to go might be the same place, but the speeds at which you want to get there aren't in alignment. And if one of the parties is moving too quickly and one person wants to move a little bit slower, you're always going to have this friction where one person's trying to push, the other person's pulling. It's awkward. It's not going to work. And so you need to find a relationship where you have clear accountabilities, clear expectations, and that you have alignment of goals and speeds at which you want to get there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same question.
Yeah, same question.
Alrighty. Most important thing is you have to have the same haircut. So people who are listening to this can't see, but we do have the same kind of thing going on. No, I'll say that communication is huge. I think most, if not all, of partnership issues, as long as there's nothing shady going on, most all issues come down to some sort of misalignment in communication or something like that. And Anthony and I work really well together because we both like to communicate the same way. So that makes it easy by default. And we've got a really good system of how we talk to each other, when we ping each other to keep each other in the loop. Before pretty much any meeting, he and I get together and have a quick little powwow and say, okay, how do we want to approach this? What's our goal? What are we trying to do in this meeting? And then we chat afterwards and debrief. And there's just this consistent communication so that at any given time, even if I'm in the hospital, working with my wife through labor, I know, you know, what's going on. I know what Anthony's doing and I can completely be gone. And I know whatever he's going to do is already in alignment with what I want to do because we've talked about it.
Wow. You guys, I mean, again, some solid nuggets there. All right. So what I want to do is sum up some of the takeaways I have from this. I know Gino's going to add to it. So gentlemen, I think the clear theme of this whole show is it's a relationships game, right? Multifamily business in a whole, and being transparent and over communicating very, very clear in your communications has really been a theme of this. Mm-hmm. If you look at the broker, right? That was something that you, it was a relationship. The banker, same thing there. And then also your investors. It's all a relationship game. Gino, what do you have to add to that?
So in September of 2019, Anthony and Dan meet at a meetup. And Anthony is working for corporation business. And Dan is working full-time in real estate. But he had the nutrition business on the side. That's a great hustle. I mean, and I think Dan understood that you can't scale that up, right? And you don't want to be 6 years old working out and just taking coaches one-on-one. And it's very similar. It's very similar to Jake's vision, where Jake had his passion was working out, and he's the quote unquote the inventor of CrossFit. Don't know if that's true or not, but 10 years ago, but
allegedly,
he saw that, like, you know, it was a grind. He wanted to do it, but and so your passion sometimes doesn't translate into a business, or at least a scalable one. And you know, starting out with a 6 unit and then leaving the corporate, going into that full time, and then all of a sudden scaling up. And then the amazing thing is they meet at that meetup. Then they, you know, I think their relationship strengthens as they get into the Jake and Gino community. They start using those resources, and, you know, Anthony, education times action equals results. I think that's really important. Taking that education, but taking it seriously, having, you know, something vested. Right. Everyone can get on YouTube. Everyone can go on Bigger Pockets and they can get the free stuff, but there's nothing there and there's no action. There's no accountability. And that word accountability has been thrown around a couple times in the podcast. Accountability to a community, accountability to partnerships, accountability to investors. That will make you strong in the long term. So being held accountable to somebody will have you have skin in the game. And then ultimately, the 30 unit deal, a $3.75 million with a $1.475 million raise. Bought it at the right time of the cycle, nice asset at that part. They've really thought about their exit strategy. They thought about their debt. They've thought about their downside risk. I love all of that. You know, I think it's going to be a great deal going forward. And, you know, your investors are on board. And I love the transition, you know, the progression from raising $1 million in their first deal to almost $1.5 million on the second deal. Now, this next deal, maybe they'll do a $2.5 or $3 million raise. And they're in it for the long term, everybody. We talk about it at Jake and Gino being the conveyor belt. Get that first deal onto the conveyor belt. And once you get on the conveyor belt is going to start moving. And, you know, Dan said he's already had full cycle deals. So his full cycle deal already came. He had that liquidity event. Now he's stacking the conveyor belt with other assets. And that's what these two guys are doing. And, you know, if they don't get a deal this year, it's okay. They've got systems, they've got stuff going on, but they've got deals on the conveyor belt. And ultimately, as you start more stacking more deals on the conveyor belt, more stuff starts to happen.
Mm-hmm. We will be getting deals this year, Gino.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, definitely.
I know you will. That's just great.
We're jonesing.
So. All right, gentlemen, listen. Let's say I want to connect with you. I want to learn what investing alongside you looks like. Where and how can I make that happen?
Anthony? Yep. So go check us out at InvictusMultifamily.com right now. We have a free resource over there. That's an ebook, 22 pages long, all about passive investing in multifamily properties. So if you're new to passive investing or the concept, that's going to be a really good, great resource. That's going to take you from not knowing anything to feeling confident enough that you can actually start investing in this awesome investment vehicle. If you're an active investor, if you're one of the students in the community and you're not so much interested in being a passive investor, I'd still recommend go get that resource so you can kind of start to understand how do we talk to our passive investors? What are the questions that they have? And then start creating your own resource based on that.
Great tip.
And I think depending on when this airs, I think we might have a full book on our website too, Anthony. Can you confirm if...
Depends on when it goes live. Possibly we'll have a new book coming out here very, very shortly.
It'll be there in the near future, so keep your eyes peeled. Get on the list, our email list, and we'll keep you in the loop.
And if you like the sounds of our voice or if you want to see us on YouTube because we do always color coordinate, go check out our podcast, Multifamily Investing Made Simple, which is exactly what it sounds like.
Boom. Well, listen, Dan and Anthony, I want to thank both of you for being amazing guests on the show and sharing your movers and shakers story. Guys, listen, if you love the show, please leave us a review. And until next time, let's make it a movers and shakers week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.